According to Sarah Lee Whitson, the Middle East director at Human Rights Watch, quote, for more than two decades, the coalition has claimed that GIAT was credibly investigating allegedly unlawful airstrikes. But the investigators were doing little more than covering up war crimes. Governments selling arms to Saudi Arabia should recognize that the coalition's sham investigations do not protect them from being complicit in serious violations in Yemen. Not that we should take anyone's word at face value, but the Human Rights Watch organization is something that even these people on the other side of this argument have used to back up their own claims. So this is something that holds water in regard to their false allegations here. But we have to understand, or rather their false cover-up of these stories, or, you know what I'm saying, the false nature around all of this in manipulating the reality of the situation. It's very interesting to see this develop. As always, we question everything. We don't take anything at face value. But with all the evidence we have at hand in regard to Yemen, it's very, very clear that this is what's really going on. Simply with even just the last two events, with children in 50-plus, 60-plus children dying, it's very clear what's actually going on and that no one's actually being held accountable. And in a related story coming from ZeroHedge.com, entitled Yet Another U.S.-Saudi Massacre in Yemen, which we've already reported on, the main point being UN condemns airstrikes killing 22 children, which is the story we reported on, which actually, as far as I can tell, we broke that story from reports of Hussein al-Bukhari on the ground in Yemen. Who we'll have on the show very soon. And it's interesting I report on this, not because the UN necessarily is something that we should hold credible, but the reality that there is many, many independent international bodies who are actively now calling out what's going on in Yemen, despite the US's claims that it's not the case. So we have to consider that this is actually what's going on here. Just weeks after the US-Saudi coalition airstrike on a school bus in Yemen killed over 40 children, which we reported on then, we also reported on the coalition jets that struck another bus, killing 22 more children. With, of course, a deafening silence by the media that just a week before pretended to be concerned for such actions carried out by its government. Outlets such as The Last American Vagabond were of the first to report that the 22 children killed, which was then picked up by some international media, and even one such as the Business Insider, which I was very happy to see that at least some mainstream media were trying to report what was going on. The fact that the UN quickly weighed in on the attack is actually very significant, given that both Saudi and United States gave aggressive and defensive statements indicating they do not deliberately target civilians or civilian infrastructure, despite all the death and evidence to the contrary. Earlier this month, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called for an independent and prompt investigation into Saudi coalition airstrikes on civilian targets, including the August 9th school bus attack. UNICEF's regional director in the Middle East and North Africa had tweeted in the aftermath of the school bus massacre, "No more excuses." So it's very clear that there are many independent international bodies, and not independent, whether talking about the UN or otherwise, that are actively speaking out about the reality of what's going on in Yemen. Despite the brief discussion by the mainstream media.
Oh, guess what media is talking about? Many of us are upset with statements made praising a recently deceased warmongering psychopath and his blood-soaked legacy. Incredibly offensive for anyone who cares about the late senator's relentless push to inflict military violence around the world at every opportunity. McCain was easily the single most virulent warmonger on Capitol Hill, so praising him and his legacy as exemplary of human decency necessarily clashes with any peace economy platform. As a prank to make a big flame shoot out the back of his jet, igniting a Zuni missile on the wing of the A-4 behind him, shooting into a pile of ammo, blowing up and killing 134, wounding 200, Senator's son Johnny Wetstart got away with pumping raw fuel into the cold engines of his Douglas A-4 Skyhawk, which served in U.S. retaliatory strikes for the second Gulf of Tonkin incident. Of course, many of us know in secret, Daniel Ellsberg exposed the stage setup, establishing pretext for the genocidal Holocaust in Southeast Asia. The devil is firing up his barbecue for the senator's son now over. Damn, I could have had a Westmoreland. That was half a century ago. The same thing is happening in Yemen as I speak. But wait a minute, who's that over at Outer Lines or something?
Oh,
Queen of Peace, of course, the Devil's Advocate from 4951666 show.
And the sidestepping of any responsibility by the United States government, it's very clear that something is going on here. So as always, ask yourself why it's not being addressed and why the media is continually ignoring it for the most part. We have to hope that this gets more attention. And the UN is not the answer as far as I'm concerned, because it seems very clear that they ultimately are a toothless tiger when it comes to actually holding these people accountable. But at the end of the day, when we can get enough attention on what's really going on, we may actually see some change here. And it's very clear that the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition is actively targeting children and civilians. And to back up that story, a great article coming out today by Whitney Webb for Mint Press News entitled MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, wants Yemenis to shiver for generations when they hear Saudi Arabia vows to continue targeting children. Very interesting. Seems to completely contradict everything that the U.S. and even Saudi officials have been saying. We have to make sure we really understand what this is, what's being said here. And this is a profound statement. Now, on Monday, the UN humanitarian coordinator in Yemen, Lise Grande, called yet again for another independent and impartial investigation into the Saudi Arabia-led coalition's attacks on Yemeni civilians. And these repeated calls for actual investigation show just how false and disingenuous the U.S. and Saudi claims of not targeting civilians, and, you know, what's happening in Yemen is these are all legitimate military targets, how really disingenuous these truly are. Again, with all these different people calling out for this. Now, Grande stated that what is happening in Yemen is unimaginable, and added that, quote, the time has come to wake up to the terrible reality of the war and its human cost, and the need to work together to end hostilities. Now, who could possibly disagree with a statement like that? Of course, the people that are carrying out the atrocities in Yemen. Despite the numerous international outcries from UN officials and other public figures, the concern over the coalition's extensive targeting of civilians is unlikely to influence Saudi Arabia's actions at all. Indeed, just as Grande called for an independent investigation, Middle East Monitor reported that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman had recently vowed to continue targeting women and children throughout Yemen in order to, quote, leave a big impact on the consciousness of Yemenis for generations. Now, repeat that. He vowed to continue targeting women and children throughout Yemen in order to leave a big impact on the consciousness of Yemenis for generations. This is the very person the U.S. is supporting with your tax dollars, vowing to target women and children to make an impact. Sounds very similar to what's going on in Palestine with the Israelis, actively attacking civilian targets to punish them for resisting whatsoever. These are U.S. allies, backed with your tax dollars. Understand that. Mohammed bin Salman allegedly made these comments earlier this month during a meeting with coalition military commanders following the coalition's bombing of a school bus full of children in early August, which we reported on, the one that the Saudi-led coalition has openly defended as a legitimate military operation. Understand, we have 40 to 50 children who died in this bus on the way to a field trip, and they still maintain it's a legitimate military operation. I wonder how they're going to actually come out with some kind of investigation that says otherwise when they've already claimed that that's actually what happened. According to the report, Mohammed bin Salman also affirmed that, quote, he did not care about international criticism, and further stated that the coalition would continue to carry out military operations on civilian targets because, quote, we, Saudi Arabia, want their children, Yemeni's children, and women, and even their men, to shiver whenever the name Saudi Arabia is mentioned. Now ask yourself if these are the kind of people that represent Americans. If these are the kind of people that the United States government should be spending our tax dollars to help. Ask yourself if this is what they pretend to represent around the world. Ask yourself if this is in any way better or worse than what's going on in Iran. Absolutely. To quite the contrary, Iran is absolutely not even close to what we're talking about here. They claim the opposite, but we have no proof to back that up. Right here, we literally have the leader of the monarchy authoritarian nation that the U.S. directly supports outright claiming that he wants to target women and children, despite the claims that that's never the case, openly saying it to make them shiver whenever the name Saudi Arabia is mentioned. These are the people the U.S. government supports. It has to resonate with us. Moving on to the next story, coming from antimedia.com, and for the final story of the day, entitled Russia Accuses Britain of Planning False Flag Chemical Attack in Northern Syria. Now, this is not a new story. We've been covering this since months ago when Russia accused France and the UK and US of already creating this. And obviously, this is coming to pass exactly as they said it would. Now, again, they're claiming something that we recently reported on about the chlorine tanks, and this is an important story to understand. Now, I'm not saying you should take what Russia says at face value either. We should be critical and skeptical of every report we see. But to date, there is more than enough evidence to suggest this is exactly what's carrying out, so I think it's important that we take this with a grain of salt like anything, but be open to the fact that this is, in fact, what's coming to pass. Because it makes absolutely no sense for someone in Assad's position to do this or plan it or carry anything out of the kind that would actually give them the only excuse they need, after Bolton even said as such, to stop them from taking back the last bit of their sovereign territory. Very interesting development. Now, with recent statements by the U.S. officials, which we talked about, threatening to attack Syria if chemical weapons are used, apparently by anyone in their vicinity, during the effort to take back Syria's sovereign territory from the U.S. in Idlib, Russian officials are openly concerned that a staged event is currently underway, which will allow the pretext for another U.S. attack. Russia issued a statement Saturday claiming that rebel groups, with the help of British special services, are preparing to stage a false flag chemical attack in Idlib, something that they can blame on the Syrian government so the U.S. has an excuse to attack, which is how we've seen this played out numerous times in the past, verifiably so. Russia's defense ministry reported 8 chlorine tanks, which we reported on a couple days ago, were recently delivered to Jasir al-Shunkur, a town in Idlib, and then later taken to a nearby village to stage a chlorine attack. Claims of chlorine attacks are common among rebels, and in the past, reports of a chlorine gas release can quickly grow into wild speculation without any evidence whatsoever of advanced nerve agents being used, as we saw in Douma. Direct attacks coming from the U.S. to an event we now know was not even carried out. In the past, the U.S. and Britain have required very little evidence with respect to such attacks, launching strikes before any investigation can even take place. 8 chlorine tanks would be likely more than enough to justify, in their minds, such an attack. Now, this is a very important thing we need to keep our eyes on and realize what's developing here. And also understand that everything that's going on, maybe in regard to Cohen or many other stories, are directly designed to keep us from paying attention to the bigger stories. And how these things are very, very importantly defining what America is around the world. As these continue to develop, as the United States government continues, or rather the U.S. oligarchy, who has hijacked this country from the people, continue to support the worst around the world. It is literally changing the perception, if not already there, for the rest of the people around the world. About us, about the country, about many things. So it's time that we stop giving them this air of altruism. And realize that just because they're in these positions does not make them inherently good. Does not mean they inherently are seeking the best thing for the American people. In fact, quite the opposite. It seems very clearly they're trying to seek out what's best for them and the people who financially support them. So take all this with you. Research it for yourself. Make sure you share the links. Make sure you dive into the show notes below and check out all the independent sources. Stay tuned on this channel for the TLAV research and review that we will discuss this and much more for the next couple hours. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
And TLAV means the Last American Vagabond. And what have we got here? Oh, yes. I was going to go back to the beginning. Catch some of his
independent news as we see it.
Some of stuff on the church.
So today I want to focus on an important concept called news we've been talking about. And that's really this idea, this kind of underlying concept in a lot of things we perceive about ourselves today. Whether you're talking about black and whispering as it rains, streets of
Philadelphia. Well, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So that's where the last week's scandal substance was. And here's the Last American Vagabond with some more on the Vatican.
But the United States or otherwise, this idea of some kind of overarching altruistic premise that anybody in any institution, government, corporation, doctor, anybody, is always just inherently altruistic or always has your best interests in mind. That is almost never the case. And that's almost the only absolute I'll ever state is it's never the case that they're always altruistic. Nothing is ever absolute. And this idea that we've somehow been manipulated to see these positions as such, that they're always looking out for the best interest of Americans, or, you know, they would never do something that malicious because no, they're doing the right thing. They're human beings. Everybody in any position has their own agendas, their own sometimes malicious or sinister intentions behind these things, and we have to begin to recognize that. Now, before I move forward on some of the topics we're going to discuss today, I want to point out that I did an excellent interview with James Corbett. He always just has such an insight onto the things really going on that I want to make sure all of you take a moment to check out, which was entitled The Social Media Regulation PSYOP. They create a problem which we then aggressively react to, and they swing in with the solution that they've had planned well before the problem was ever created. And we're always confronted with this, especially in this country. And we have to realize that yet again, this is what we're being confronted with, and this is my opinion, not the answer. But as always, I'm open to other perspectives. I can see the insight into some of the arguments made on the other side of it, but I recommend you check out this interview for yourself, come to your own conclusions, as always. So keeping this in line, in this vein of thought today, with exposing the people that were we are told to see as inherently altruistic. To start with the first article of the day, coming from ZeroHedge.com, which is a big article, even in the title, the word bombshell, which I don't like to use very often, but this is an important topic today that is really exposing something, in my opinion, one of the largest institutions that are always looked at as inherently altruistic. Article entitled, "In Historic Bombshell, Vatican Official Accuses Pope Francis of Covering Up Sexual Abuse, Calls for Resignation." Now, this is a very profound development in this topic. People in many alternative platforms, outlets that I personally don't have a lot of faith in, that I think are using topics to mislead people, I'm not going to throw out names, have been talking about discussions around the Pope for a year or months now, saying that he will be accused of pedophilia or they have allegations or he's going to be fired. And, you know, so whether or not they did have some kind of insight into this developing story or they were simply just discussing something we all kind of suspected, at least in this vein of thought. Nonetheless, we are now seeing this come to pass where actual Vatican officials are calling for his resignation. So an 11-page written testament that has been called a truly historic bombshell, a former Papal Nuncio, or Vatican ambassador to the U.S., offers testimony concerning, quote, who in the hierarchy knew what and when about the crimes of Cardinal McCarrick. The testimony implicates a host of high-ranking churchmen and the Pope himself. A former official, Archbishop Carlo Mario Vigiano, 77 years old, said that Pope Francis in 2013, it discusses about allegations of sexual abuse against a prominent priest, and that Francis took absolutely no action when he was told about this. He's now calling for Francis to actually step down as Pope. Vigiano's statement is full of very strong allegations, and concludes with the call for Francis' allegations, saying, quote, in this extremely dramatic moment for the universal church, we must acknowledge his mistakes, and in keeping with the proclaimed principle of zero tolerance, again, Pope Francis must be the first to set a good example to cardinals and bishops who covered up McCarrick's abuses and resign along with all of them. That is point blank. It's a big statement. Archbishop Vigiano, I think it's Vigano. I don't want to mispronounce his name, but it looks like Vigano, said in his written statement that Pope Francis continued to cover for McCarrick, and not only did he, quote, not take into account the sanctions that Pope Benedict had imposed on him, but also made McCarrick his trusted counselor. Vigano said that the statement, the former Archbishop of Washington advised the Pope to appoint a number of bishops in the United States, including Cardinals Blas Cooperich of Chicago and Joseph Tobin of Newark. I always find the Washington tie-in there very interesting. Pope Francis accepted McCarrick's resignation in July 28th. McCarrick had maintained his innocence, but this month, a Pennsylvania grand jury, which we reported on, issued a report that said that more than 300 priests abused more than 1,000 children, and likely thousands more over 7 decades, sadly much of which is well beyond the statute of limitations, which is, again, absurd to realize that these priests are being exposed for what they are and yet still can't be held accountable. Vigiano confirmed that he wrote the statement, speaking with CBS News, and said he was speaking out now to combat the grave situation in the church, to protect the church, and also to stop future abuse. He told them he had no agenda and was simply stating facts. This is a very big development, and it's hard for those that have actively said, oh, well, we should trust what the Pope says and what these cardinals say because they're in the church. Well, now we have an actual Vatican official or former saying the same, calling these people out. So it puts them in a sticky situation when you're saying, well, now who do we trust? It's very clear that this has been a developing story, and that there's mountains of evidence to suggest, and as well as even the, 39 Chilean priests that all stepped down under allegations of pedophilia. This is a very clear thing that we have proof to verify is going on. The question is whether or not the Pope was involved or covered it up. And again, I think that's pretty self-explanatory at this point, but come to your own conclusions. In a rebuttal to this, the Pope himself spoke out, and this article is entitled, Pope Dismisses Explosive Testimony of Abuse Cover-Up. I will, quote, not say one word, which is interesting, the way that that's phrased. But this is definitely an interesting development to see his response to this. Now, speaking to reporters on a flight returning to Rome from an official visit to Dublin on Sunday, the Pope indicated he will not respond to explosive charges from a top Vatican official that the pontiff, which is what they call the Pope, knowingly covered up widespread sexual abuse. The Pope dismissed the bombshell document containing the charges, which emerged Saturday night, saying simply that the allegations, quote, speak for themselves. And then he would, quote, not say one word on the matter. Now, you could take that a couple of ways, whether he's saying that they're true or that they're so obviously fake. That's for open to interpretation. Interesting way to cover to combat this. Now, speaking with reporters on Sunday, the Pope stated, quote, I read that statement this morning. I read it, and I will say sincerely that I must say this to you, the reporters, and all of you who are interested. Read the document carefully and judge it for yourselves. I will not say one word on this. I think the statement speaks for itself, and you have sufficient journalistic capacity to reach your own conclusions. Again, very down the line, not saying it's not true, just simply saying that it speaks for itself. And if you do read the information, it seems pretty clear that there's some weight to this. So this is a developing story, but I truly do think that this is what we have known for a long time, truly coming out. I think there's more than enough evidence to suggest that there is at the very least a major cover-up of some horrible, horrible child abuse going on for centuries, if not much longer, at least that we can prove. So this is a developing story we'll keep track of and make sure we follow up with any developments, whether the Pope steps down or otherwise, but pretty profound story, especially with all the discussions we have about, you know, whether we're talking Pedogate or Pizzagate or just these concepts of people in these positions, which at one point were said, how dare you even accuse someone like that of something like this, right? Without considering that it may in fact be true. Moving on to the next story and another interesting one that I quickly want to touch on that I think speaks for itself, and that if you watched this channel, you would already be well aware of exactly what this is indicating. The title is In Stunning Reversal, Michael Cohen's Attorney Backpedals on Trump-Russia Claims. Now, those of you that are watching this channel on a regular basis are not surprised by this at all, because it is, in fact, exactly what I said would happen. Not to say that I'm the only one, simply the reality that this story, as many others are completely tied to this Russiagate discussion, are being used and timed to keep your attention away from much larger things going on. As the article discusses, this will be reported on by some of the mainstream outlets, which it already has, but of course not breaking headline news somewhere farther down on the feed, if at all, and very few people will retweet this or talk about it, carrying the main story that Cohen knows the truth. And the reality that it's actually not the case.
See, to the contrary. So yesterday, I traveled to London to sit down with WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange in an attempt to set the record straight. Now, he rarely does these exclusive long-form interviews, given the nature of his current situation. Now, for 4.5 years, he has been confined at the Ecuadorian embassy, where he's not seen the light of day in all that time. So Assange, of course, he founded the group WikiLeaks. That was back in 2006. And in the years following, he made international headlines after releasing hundreds of thousands of classified U.S. government documents. And in 2010, he was detained in England after Swedish officials issued an arrest warrant over allegations that he may have sexually assaulted two women. That is a charge which he will respond to later in this program tonight in this interview. Now, in 2012, he was granted asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy in the city of London. Now, he has been living there ever since in the outcome of the election. You didn't think Donald Trump was going to win.
I didn't think Donald Trump would win. I thought the establishment, for want of a better word, would see Hillary Clinton losing and then would pile in more money and more energy in various TV networks or on her side and make sure that she won. I think that analysis was still correct, but it missed something fundamental, which is that the amount of investment to the Hillary Clinton campaign was in proportion to the degree that the establishment thought that she would lose. And she was aggressively projecting that she would be the inevitable winner and was above, 5-10 points in the opinion polling. So she only got $1.5 billion directed into her campaign. If they thought she was going to lose, maybe she would have gotten $5 billion. We'd see a different result.
It's very interesting post-election, and it didn't even really happen immediately, but the narrative has begun that, in fact, the U.S. government is accusing WikiLeaks of having received materials from Russia. did Russia give you this information or anybody associated with Russia?
Our source is not a state party. So the answer for our interactions is no. But if we look at the most recent statement by the US government, which is on the 29th of December, okay, we had five different branches of government, Treasury, DHS, FBI, White House, presenting their accusations to underpin Obama's throwing out 35 Russian diplomats. What was missing from all of those statements? The word WikiLeaks. It's very strange. Now, my interpretation is that there's either, not surprisingly, a problem they feel with the evidence as far as WikiLeaks is concerned. Well, James Clapper said, we don't know how WikiLeaks got this information, we don't know when WikiLeaks got this information. But let's imagine that they are saying, okay, the problem here is that WikiLeaks published information. What are they saying? WikiLeaks published true information that the American public read. That information was the words of Hillary Clinton and her campaign manager, John Podesta, and other people in her campaign, and the American public read that information, true information, and said, we don't like these people, and then voted accordingly.
But that's
not sustainable. So what they want to do instead is conflate our publication of true information with, say, hacking, or rather alleged hacking, of US vote counting machines. And even Obama has had to admit that there has been no hacking of US vote counting machines.
No evidence of that. But the main focus for most Americans, they are being told by Hillary Clinton's campaign, by the President of the United States, there are the Department of Homeland Security, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, etc., that in fact WikiLeaks was working with the Russian government to influence the election. Is that true in any way, shape, matter, or form?
No, that's absolutely false. And if you read their statements carefully, you'll see they don't actually say that. They kind of mentioned one fact here and one fact there and nothing else. In the most up-to-date information, on the 29th of December, where the FBI, DHS, White House, etc. made a statement, what is completely absent from all those statements is WikiLeaks. Totally absent. So what's going on? Well, I believe two things are going on. Number one, they don't have the evidence that WikiLeaks is involved in that way. Now, why am I confident about that? Well, because there is one person in the world, and I think it's actually only one, who knows exactly what is going on with our publications, and that's me.
Can you say to the American people, unequivocally, that you did not get this information about the DNC, John Podesta's emails? Can you tell the American people 1,000% you did not get it from Russia or
yes,
anybody associated with Russia?
We can say, we have said repeatedly over the last 2 months that our source is not the Russian government and it is not a state party.
There was one report in the Daily Mail that suggested somebody that you are friendly with actually was handed the documents at American University in a wooded area by a disgruntled Democrat who felt betrayed because the revelation showed that Bernie Sanders had been betrayed and they didn't like the corruption of the Clinton Foundation. Can you confirm or deny that? Is that story true?
Well, that statement came from Craig Murray. He
friend of yours?
Friend of mine. He's been here several times. But WikiLeaks is a source protection organization. We are famous for never having exposed one of our sources over 10 years. That's why sources trust us and they come to us. So I can't comment on other people's statements about our sources, except to say what we have said, which is that our sources are not a state party.
Can I ask you this? Have you ever talked to Vladimir Putin?
No.
Have you ever talked to any of his surrogates?
No.
Have you ever talked to Donald Trump?
No.
any of his surrogates?
No.
Not one?
No.
There was some report that you might have talked to somebody who was not associated with the campaign, Roger Stone.
No, that's false. I think where this Roger Stone claim is coming from is there's a radio guy on WBAI, which is a mutual friend, who wanted to come and see me to see if I would set up a radio show on WBAI, but he didn't. He did come to London, but he didn't meet with me.
So if the U.S. government is accusing WikiLeaks of having received these materials from Russia, and you say it's false, it did not come from Russia, and the President of the United States is advancing the narrative, is the President of the United States lying to the American people?
Well, he's acting like a lawyer. If you look at most of his statements, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say WikiLeaks obtained its information from Russia, worked with Russia.
He's saying Russia's trying to influence the U.S. elections.
Yes, so he and you also note that he doesn't say,
Well, of course, he asked very publicly for Russia to give WikiLeaks, blah, blah, blah. After this shit hit the fan in June 12th and in the midst of that campaign. But of course, his wedding guest, has already spun the Russia, blame Russia for our getting caught chopping heads and stealing Bernie's primary win. Guns and Butter. Well, I couldn't find the twitwit that talked about it, but here's the episode where the avalanche of two complaints about the Kevin saying most Jews support the liberation of Palestine, throwing a monkey wrench into the fifth column's cannon fodder for the Holy Land Project.
Is Guns and Butter
website. Yep. Fortunate son.